the blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatyampi Sabaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatyampi Sabaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatyampi Sabaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridaya. Homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By a compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by a compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by a compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by a compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by a compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by a compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by a compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by a compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibited precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in the soul of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi sabaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening, or even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day. There must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hands is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness.
Sitting tall on the cushion with the spine erect. Imagine that you're trying to touch the ceiling with the crown of your head. Reaching up through the spine, up into the crown of the head. Shoulders are relaxed. hands are in the cosmic mudra. Right hand on the bottom, left one on top. Center knuckles line up. And the thumbs come around to lightly touch and make it oval with the hands. The hips are tilted slightly forward to allow for a gentle curve in the lower back, while at the same time reaching up with the crown of the head. The head is tilted down at approximately a 45 degree angle. Eyes are open and slightly out of focus, as if you're looking through the wall to a point 3 or 4 feet in front of you. Belly is relaxed. Breathing through the nose. And as you're breathing, practice counting the breaths on the exhale. So you breathe in and you breathe out and count one silently to yourself. Breathe in and breathe out and count two. And so on, all the way up to 10. If you make it to 10, you can begin again at 1. If you should lose count, that's fine. Just bring your attention back to the breath and begin counting again at 1. find that your mind has wandered, gently bring it back to the breath and to the counting and begin again at one. Thank you. We are
here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Seat, please. A reminder that for those who are new to practice, there are back jacks in the corner. Now would be a time to get one. So what shall we talk about this morning? Mickey?
Well, I might get us started with a little practice testimonial.
Okay.
I was just had an opportunity last night to really watch myself in a situation and see how much has changed as a result of having done this practice over time.
Very gratifying, isn't it?
It is.
Not that we're going for that necessarily,
right.
But it is
right.
Nice to have a little kind of feedback.
That's right. It's nice to have a little. I even to be amazed by it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I was actually in an event last night, and there was one particular moment where I really saw how this person, this being, has grown into a place where she can step up into life.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sensing from that, kind of implied in that, is in the past, same situation might arise, but there wouldn't be a going into life. There'd be a going into conditioned mind in some way to deal with that.
Yeah.
And what you saw last night is that situation arose, probably you felt that tendency inside, you know, that old kind of familiar way of surviving this, and watch yourself make a different choice that in some way was a stepping into life for you.
Exactly. And it was as simple as it was a big event where a lot of people were eating, and there was a couple of people who ended up, they were just sitting by themselves, and they were people who actually I have some history with that's not very pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing in me, conditioned me, wanted to go sit with them.
Mm-hmm.
But my heart didn't want them to eat alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to go and sit with them and have a very pleasant conversation. all by myself with them, you know, which was, it's exactly what you said, that in the past, my conditioning would have led me in one direction, would have just led me to say, well, I know they're alone, but I'm not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And just saw that actually there was, how would I say it? You know, there was no question that I would go with what conditioning told me to do.
Wasn't even like a real temptation.
It wasn't even an option.
Mm-hmm.
I just knew what life was calling me to do, mm-hmm. and I was willing to do it.
So that's interesting, Mickey. For the sake of folks who are maybe just kind of launching out in this whole thing this week, I wonder if you could say a little bit about how you can tell the difference between what's conditioned mind and what's life.
That's a really good question. And if I look at that particular example, what's conditioned mind all came from up here in my head.
Okay, so it's all, would you say it's thought-driven?
It's thought-driven, it's story-driven, it's preference-driven. Mm-hmm. I don't want to.
Okay, yeah.
You can't make me.
So those, for you, those are particular kind of forms of that conditioned mind takes. So you recognize those.
Yeah.
You know, when you hear, I don't want to, or you can't make me, okay, well, we're probably not dealing with life here, we're probably dealing with conditioning.
Right, exactly. So a lot driven by preference, by what I like and don't like,
mm-hmm.
what I want to do and what I don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the other, the what life is suggesting to me, what is speaking to me, I would say definitely comes from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's unspoken. It's an impulse. It's an insight. It's a clarity.
Mm-hmm.
But not in
thought forms.
Not in thought forms. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
There was no thought of, oh, I should do this.
Mm-hmm. So just to reflect what you've said so far, that the conditioning is happening all up here, and it's thought-driven. There's all kind of preferences. There's voices in there. We'll be talking about voices a little bit later in the retreat. There's voices in there, and it's being driven by this thing that's happening up here. And then, so that's the conditioned part of it, and that's kind of the old habit. And you, in the situation describing, you watched, you know, you saw those two people over there, and you sort of watched that arise. You know, I want to. And then there's this other place in you that's not, it's not coming from up here. It's not thought-driven, but there's a, it sounds like there's a knowing with it.
Right.
Maybe a different kind of knowing than this kind of knowing. There's a clarity with it, and it feels more like it comes from, like from your heart, from down here. And those are two, because you've been practicing with that, you have an experience that tells you those are two really distinct places to act from.
Exactly.
And what you really want is to act from here, not here.
Right. Right. And the other thing that I'm another piece of it that as you're talking that I realize is a really key piece of it and a key practice piece of it is willingness.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think one of the great gifts of practice and of showing up here at this place and of putting ourselves in a guided situation is that, you know, that we learn how to be when either we don't have a choice or when the choice is clear. I mean,
mm-hmm.
You know, after doing a lot of working meditation here, after being on a lot of retreats here, you know, I know that I can say yes even when, quote, I don't want to.
Yeah. So another way of saying, I think, tell me if I'm right, saying exactly the same thing is, you have your willingness brings you here into this environment. This environment basically says no to ego,
mm-hmm.
to that this conditioning we were talking about just a minute ago that says it doesn't support it in any way, it doesn't reinforce it, it doesn't value it. Nothing that happens here is acted from that or in order to further that. And so what you find out is your willingness brings you into this environment where this is not going to be supported. And so basically you find this other place that you can respond to from. And so there's a place of happiness and well-being and clarity that's available even when ego is not getting what it wants. And that's kind of, that's in a lot of ways we could say what that's what this environment does is it it just assists us in separating those two.
Right.
Because, you know, we're all conditioned to think that this is me. But to find out this is not me, this is just something that's sort of been stuck to me and is up there interfering with my ability to really be here and present and enjoy my life. And then we find this other place that we can begin to live from.
Yeah, so what I was hearing is that the willingness to not be this allows us to discover who we are as this.
And it does take a lot of willingness, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think probably, I would bet you a lot of people in the room would experience this in the next week, whether they live here or just here for a week. Because as you say, in this environment, it's very threatening to ego. Ego just has a big problem with it. And it kicks up a fuss, it fights it, resists it. And that's all, in a way, is good to see, too, because we see that happening. And like you say, we see, that's not me. That's just this old programming that is there just surviving life in a way that's not at all happy. And there's this other place that feels a lot more like me when I really kind of get there that isn't really interested in that and just wants to be here.
Yeah, and just one last thing is that the important thing I think that I learned over time is that the ego part, it isn't going to ever stop. It's not, you know, I'm never going to be able to say I've arrived, mm-hmm. and now whenever I show up, it will always be from the heart, and I will never have to make a choice because it will always be clear and I know that's not going to happen,
mm-hmm.
but I also have more trust in and confidence in my ability to make the other choice,
mm-hmm.
in spite of that always happening. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a long time in my practice where I sort of maybe thought it would stop someday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't tend to, though, does it?
No.
But at the same time, this doesn't stop either.
No.
This is always here, always available. We just really have to turn our attention to it. And you might say, in the way you're speaking, turn our willingness to it. Become willing for it. And it's just here. And then this goes way over there, where we don't have to give any of our life or our time or our attention to it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Todd.
Very similar to that conversation right before group, I just went into the twilight zone. I had no idea where I was. I totally lost reference of what the schedule was, what was happening next. But I didn't turn to conditioned mind. I went back into the dining hall and I looked at the schedule. Didn't click what was kind of happening around me.
Mm-hmm.
It was telling me one thing, but life was showing me a totally different experience. And it was just, so I just was standing in the archway going, okay, this is very fascinating. I don't know what to do. I really don't know what to do. I'm going to stand here until I figure out what to do.
Okay.
And I did. I stood there and stood there. And then I see some of the neighbors and some of the community coming up. And I'm thinking, okay, I don't know what day it is now. I've lost reference. Is it Monday? Is it Sunday? So I'm still, and the neat thing is, with all the training I've been doing, is that I didn't go to condition my mind to reference,
mm-hmm.
what the next step was, and then I just dropped in. Well, it must be Sunday group.
Must be Sunday.
Must be Sunday. Because life is showing me it's Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the schedule that the information that was posted.
So what I hear you're saying is, rather than kind of being in this kind of relationship with what's going on, well,
yeah.
this is what's happening,
right?
And not paying any attention to what's going on.
Yeah.
You were paying attention. You were kind of, there's, yeah. some awareness there. You're noticing, well, things aren't really lining up.
It was crazy. Yeah.
And then that kind of openness, I love that kind of, I'm just going to stop. I don't think it's till you figured it out, even though that's what you said. It's more you stop till you can see.
Yes.
Isn't it? You're going to stop until you can see what's going on.
Yeah.
And then implied in that, or I hear in that, an openness to kind of the life and what's happening, and then sooner or later, you know, oh, the information was there, and then you could see what was happening.
Right, right. And then it's funny, when I got into group, still a flood of conditioning came in saying, no, this must be that there's nothing wrong. And then it was second guessing. That's a huge chunk of my karma. Second guess is every move I make.
Mm-hmm.
So second guess that information I got from life, which I acted on,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sitting here, and then life dropped in. Well, if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, life will guide you. I'm always guided if I'm in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Somebody will tell you.
Someone will tell. Someone will come up and say, oh, yeah, please report to the kitchen or whatever it takes, right? So I just sat in that like, yeah, you know what? Or I may just start that there's nothing wrong with the tree. I don't know. it might be a castaway. But the neat thing was is that I just let that conversation go because it just had no relevance to my experience.
Yeah, it's a good point. It never does it?
No.
The conversation of mine never has any relevance to our actual experience.
No. And I just went in the ease of I'll be guided by life or an external life form a monk. And I'll be, or just proceed, and it is Sunday group.
Yeah.
So
another part of that, you haven't said this, but it's, you know, it's easy to kind of put it all over it, is there's not a fear of, like, doing it right. First, doing it wrong versus doing it right. You know, be getting in trouble, you know, being the wrong person, all that. Because that kind of conditioning tends to close down those apertures, doesn't it, to the information that's coming in. So without that, you can just, well, I'm just going to go where it feels like life is guiding me.
Yeah.
I might find out that I'm kind of heading in exactly the wrong direction, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Sooner or later, somebody will tell me, or I'll find out, and then I'll go where I'm supposed to go.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
thank you.
I got to see a process that I run all the time, which is getting through it.
Getting through it. Mm-hmm.
And see the possibility of broadening out and choosing something besides just getting through it.
Yeah.
Which I haven't really seen it so clearly before, how that process, how that way of relating to what's happening really shuts down, really is kind of a tunnel vision that nothing good can happen.
Oh, and nothing good can happen.
Yeah. Huh. It's like, I'm just going to survive this, and I don't have a openness to experience anything larger than that.
I see what you mean. That kind of that mindset, there's an assumption in it, isn't there, that nothing good can happen? That's why you've got to survive. You're just getting through it because there's really nothing here that's any good or that will be for you. You just got to kind of get through it.
Right. So it's kind of a default that there's nothing here, and I'm just, so I'm going to shut down as much input as possible because there's nothing good here, and kind of tunnel my way through it.
Supposedly to a place where there's something good will happen.
Where something good can happen, right. And I really got to see, well, wait a second, I don't want to just get through it. I want to see what else could happen.
You want to live it.
Yeah. And when I did that, it was kind of like the difference between when you're walking and you're looking at the ground.
Mm-hmm. Like a spot on the ground as you're going?
When you're kind of just watching your feet versus when you lift your head and all of a sudden there's like stuff, life and a world and things to interact with. Mm-hmm. It was really that dramatically different of a view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're really speaking about awareness, aren't you? Because conditioning will try to, you know, this thing we were talking about a minute ago that's up here that Mickey was talking about. You know, what it does is it directs your attention all the time.
Right.
Right? So it's talking to you back here about how things are, or like as was being said before, you know, what you like, what you don't like. So in this case, it's telling you about what's going on and saying there's nothing good here. You just need to kind of focus, get through it. And it's got the attention in a real little tiny place.
Right.
So all you can see is the kind of the path through to survive the situation that's there.
Right.
And what you got is, well, there's a whole, your attention doesn't have to be directed in that way.
Right.
If you let go of that story that says that there's nothing good here, then your attention can go to everything that's around you, and kind of your awareness can expand to include everything that is here with you, which obviously is full of all kinds of good things.
Right. It's like there's way more input happening. And with that input, I mean, what are the odds that some of that is going to actually be joyful or fun or something?
Well, there's birds, there's trees, there's sunlight, there's flowers.
Right. There's so much more than just that little square of dirt right in front of my feet.
Yeah, I love that. You know, conditioning, it only wants to see what's the problem, doesn't it?
Right.
All he wants to see what's wrong, what is insufficient, or, you know, sometimes it'll focus on us too and what's wrong with us, how we're not measuring up. But that's just this little tiny dot in the middle of this vast possible experience. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it makes sense. If you look at conditioned mind as kind of like a machine that has a purpose, has the purpose of causing us to suffer, which is kind of how it seems a lot of times, that makes sense. You know, it wants to focus our attention on something that's wrong or feel bad about, and in that, take away all this stuff that is potentially joyful. Mm-hmm. And as you're saying, all we have to do is just see that's going on, expand our awareness to what's actually here, and then there's just an enormous variety and amount of things to receive. That are life-giving and heart-filling and joy-producing.
Right, the expanse of options is so infinite, mm-hmm. compared to getting through it. Mm-hmm. It's just amazingly more, just infinite number of possibilities,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
when I can expand beyond that view.
Yeah, let me ask you a question, if you don't mind. How would you say that you saw that?
The thing that I'm saying coincided with, you know, I was walking down the path.
Okay.
And I was literally...
You were in the story.
In the story.
Having your attention focused.
Attention focused. I'm just going to get through this. And noticing that what I'm visually seeing is just in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
The dirt in front of my feet.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that longing, because this is such a familiar story,
mm-hmm.
that, wait, like, I came here to actually experience this.
Mm-hmm.
I want to experience this. I don't want to just shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, you know, like, what else is there? What else can I open to?
Mm-hmm.
And it literally was that simple as just lifting my head.
Yeah.
And that simple act reminded me of how many things here that I love and how many things I relate to and how much joy
right.
there is, and helped me remember as I was going to the next task that there was a possibility of joy in that. There was lots of possibility that viewpoint wasn't the only viewpoint.
Yeah. So you were going along, and your attention was being focused. You're in that story, but at the same time, you're paying attention to what's going on with you,
right?
Right.
Right.
And you suddenly saw it. It's funny how once you see it, it's so obvious, but before you see it, it's not obvious at all.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like, well, this is reality. This is all that's going on.
Right.
But you suddenly saw that's the place that you were, and as soon as you saw that, it's like it moves from being here, where it's dominating your experience, kind of to here, where you can see it. And just, well, oh, I see what's going on.
Right.
Then suddenly your attention and awareness freed up to all these other possibilities, and it sounded like they just kind of started coming in as
right.
that happened.
Right, but you're right. First, there was that step back to see what was being said in my head,
mm-hmm.
to see what was happening in there, what was the story that was going on,
mm-hmm.
just to get to that level of awareness is a step out.
Yeah, and almost everything kind of follows after that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's like we were talking about earlier, just opening up an aperture to life, and life just starts pouring in, and here's all this other information, all the other possibilities that are there, not to mention, you know, the beauty of what's around you, and you know, the feeling, probably the feelings that are going on in the body that are not related to this kind of story, and just everything else is there.
Right. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Mark.
So, similarly, we were coming here, and because of the way that the morning ran, I was deep in conditioning. I was angry. I was feeling, and I had that narrow focus of vision,
mm-hmm.
that sense of being inside of a dark room.
So maybe your story might have been a little different than another person's story, but it's the same kind of process, isn't it?
Yes.
Having your attention focused, driven by a story that's back here.
Right. And that feel, I was angry. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to figure out why I was angry, and I'm driving, and it came an opportunity to tell the story. My partner was there, and she said, "Well, you should talk about this as a group." And I said, "No."
That's clear, isn't it?
Yeah. That was like, it was as if a little firecracker went off, mm-hmm. and at that moment I knew I was deep in conditioning, mm-hmm. and I really didn't want to be there.
Mm-hmm. So when that kind of thing happens, it's kind of hard to not see it, isn't it? That's what's good about this sort of thing.
It was great.
Say, whoa, gosh, something is going on here. I need to disidentify it. Yeah, step back a little.
Just a tad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the next thing that happened, which was fun for me, is that I began to disidentify, and I was...
Let me tell people what that word means. So you're in that story. It's believable to you. You're being told all the elements of the story over and over again, probably.
Yeah, I'm in it.
You're in it. And then when you talk about disidentifying, what you mean is, kind of like we meant a minute ago, you move it over here, you no longer believe it completely. You can see it. You can see that it's going on instead of just being it.
Right. Okay. So for me, it's a sense of stepping up and back.
Kind of up and back?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I go, oh, and I'm still going back and forth. I'm still mm-hmm. in it, but I know that it's there.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of 1 foot in, 1 foot out.
Yeah, very mm-hmm. much so. And what was really cool is that I started talking, and I was in it, and then I was a child, and then I was in it, and then I was a child. You could mm-hmm. watch. I could watch me moving out of it into this joyful place, which mm-hmm. is my child and where we have so much fun. And mm-hmm. it was like I laughed, but it was that transition, you know, of being in and out and physically manifesting those experiences.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we might say, so there's the anger's there, there's that joyful experience, which feels, kind of, you're talking about as a child, kind of like a childish sort of innocence, it sounds like, and joy. Mm-hmm. And then that's happening, what I mean by that is, I'm looking to my experience of what you're talking about and sort of guessing that, from my experience, what you're talking about, that it's being held in a container of awareness, mm-hmm. you're paying attention to it, that involves some kindness and some gentleness maybe and some compassion for you, or you might say, or for kind of that within you, which was involved in all that unhappiness.
Indeed. In fact, that's a really important point, because it's taken me to There Is Nothing, What Is Wrong With You retreats to discover that I deeply love myself and that I care about myself, and I go to great lengths to make sure that everybody inside there understands that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's
which is having an effect, isn't it?
Yes.
So you have a practice of helping all that is within you to understand that you're loved, or that they are loved, and all that. And because of that practice, you know, you end up in a situation like you were in this morning, which is bound to happen rarely, because it's just, you know, that's how we're put together.
Right.
And because there's a practice there of that kindness and that love and that compassion, it's a place with a little bit of help. You got a little help this morning.
Yeah.
But with or without a little bit of help, it's a place that you can go to more and more as that becomes kind of solid for you. And you can begin to relate to your inner experience from that place of unconditional love.
Absolutely. And it makes a huge difference for me. Mm-hmm. In fact, you can hear my voice just drop down.
It kind of settles down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My whole experience becomes much deeper and much more from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So that the child, that person, that joyful thing that happened as I was moving out of this place of tunnel was, it was hard. I felt, you know, I was driving, I was still driving, and the experience of the light and of my surroundings mm-hmm. and the car and the feeling of the road all was opened up. I felt the light was clearer and brighter. Mm-hmm. I was much more able to experience all of my surroundings.
Mm-hmm.
I was much more relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
It turned out to be fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great ad for awareness.
Really?
Talk about the difference between those two states.
We're talking about, you know, half a mile. Mm-hmm. It went from to, wow, this is cool.
Everything's all right. Yeah. I love that it is a practice, you know, because We don't need to take it personally when those kind of, you know, really narrow places are happening. Of course that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But that's each time that happens, it's our best opportunity to practice again, stepping back, seeing what's going on, and bringing unconditional love and acceptance to ourselves.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Chris?
My experience has a lot to do with my body, my physical body, in what I'm experiencing, whether it's pain or discomfort or whatever. And
here in particular or in general?
Well, in general.
Okay.
But particularly today, you know, okay. It's been a while since I've sat on a Zafu and a Zabutan, and my body doesn't particularly like, you know, the position
yet.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I love the terminology and the language that is introduced to me here about becoming a personality and having conversations with that ego that says, you know, this is uncomfortable, you've got to get out of this, you know, you can't sit here for 30 more minutes. And
mm-hmm.
And you know, and I specifically remember last year really feeling that, and
really hearing those voices.
Mm-hmm. And even though I have not practiced from last year to this year in sitting practice, I've done a lot of practice of awareness practice, and so sitting today, there was discomfort, and ego is saying, oh, this doesn't feel good, and ego is saying, you're not sitting correctly, and
mm-hmm.
you know, and you need to shift, and this and that and the other. But what's wonderful is truly for me coming back to the breath, mm-hmm. And experiencing that awesome place between the inhale and the exhale,
yeah.
and letting go of that conversation,
mm-hmm.
And. Yeah, and before I know it, the bell's ringing, and it's mm-hmm. time to stop, and you know, and I'm fine. Yeah, my legs fell asleep,
uh-huh.
But that was okay.
That's okay.
That was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't any shame involved that I couldn't stand up. It's mm-hmm. just, you know, here we are.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, seems like a really good thing, doesn't it?
It does.
Because, you know, sitting practice, of course, is essential to the entire practice that is offered here. And if ego could get you in a place where it could talk to you about the discomfort that happens, and the discomfort is probably inevitable, at least for a time. If it could talk to you about the discomfort that's happening in a way that you'll believe and can use it to talk you out of sitting, then it's got a nice place to hang out where it's not going to get interfered with.
Right.
And so it seems really good and helpful, doesn't it, to be kind of engaging with ego on this level and maybe making a choice for you about sitting instead of having ego make the choice for you.
Absolutely. That's
mm-hmm.
that's one of the reasons I'm back here.
Yeah, that's great. And it's also one of the reasons we sit, because, you know, it really is our best, I don't know about our best, but the simplest practice that we have to just be present. And like you say, to see what's going on, to watch what the voices are doing. And so we sit, and of course, as we sit, a lot of people have the idea that, you know, what's supposed to happen in meditation is some kind of ecstasy or, you know, these kind of experiences. But that's not what it is at all. It's to see what's going on. You know, we sit still. It's the equivalent of tides. You know, I'm just going to be still here until I can see what's happening. So we sit still. Ego arises in resistance to that, which it's going to do, and which is good because it arises in a place where we can see it. And so we sit still and watch it, and gradually we get more and more free. More and more able to live our lives ourselves instead of having ego dominating things.
Yes, and then as I push through ego, you know, fear is right on the other side.
Uh-huh.
Of, you know, well, you're still not doing it right. You're mm-hmm. still in pain, you know, and so I've made the decision to not listen to the voice, and
yep.
And then the fear comes in, and your leg's going to fall off.
And I don't know if you can you sense in what you're saying that it's really not your fear, it's ego's fear?
Yes.
So
yes.
ego is concerned about your leg, supposedly.
Right, right. Yeah. Right.
It's really
right.
not, right?
Right?
It's concerned about your attention.
Right.
Says, okay, this is not good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We can't allow this person to just sit here and pay attention. This is not going to work for us. Yeah. So, well, he'll believe something about his body. You know, he's got some karma about that. So, all right, well, what can we hit him with? Well, let's talk about, you know, the pain and how he's not going to... But that's what's actually going on. It's afraid that you're going to change your relationship with it.
Yes. Yeah. Isn't that exciting?
It is. Yeah. Not very exciting for ego.
Yeah.
And we have to remember that distinction, but really exciting for this place. Yeah. Thank you. Susan.
I really appreciated that because I think I had that experience, that experience lately, not on the cushion. So, you know, it's really good to practice with it on the cushion because then when it happens off the cushion...
You're prepared.
I'm prepared. Mm-hmm. I've changed my schedule a bit, and it feels disorienting. I can relate with what Todd's. It's like,
what's going on?
Okay, here's the alternatives. Here's what I related with what was just said. Okay, I can believe the story that there's something wrong, and I know it's being fed to me. I mean, on some level, if I look around, there's absolutely nothing wrong. This is like a dream that I've planned. It's there, and I just, you know, there's no... there's nothing to reflect me anymore in the way there was, say, 2 weeks ago or whatever.
So from a place of clarity, it's not disorienting, it's clear, something you've wanted.
Right.
But ego is disoriented about this whole thing because it's not being reflected anymore.
Right. And so there's kind of that, who am I? Mm-hmm. Who am I? And I better get some definition really quick.
We need to get back to the way it was.
Right. Yeah. So I can relate to, yes, I do. I do have a discomfort in my body and it's real. Whew. All right. That's good. Okay. Now I know who I am.
Yeah. And then everything, all the suffering just kind of launches from that place.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So the thing I was looking at that I related to just a minute ago was I had this neat thing happen. You know, yesterday Clara turned 13.
Wow.
So not only am I like in transition, she's reflected in that transition, that projection. But I was thinking about practice, and I've been looking at it a lot because I did this thing for her, and I had this whole process around, okay, what a good mom should do.
For you mean like for her birthday or something?
Yeah, I did this like a ritual thing.
Okay.
I mean, it's totally outside the bounds of who I am, uh-huh. Who I define myself as. You know, I am a... You know me, I'm a Christian and I'm a Buddhist, but I'm not fluffy and,
right.
You know.
The Buddhist thing is, you know.
Yeah, that's like, it's right over here, but the great thing about this Buddhist thing is all I have to do is pay attention. I don't have to, like, do anything uncomfortable except hold on to the cushion and breathe, you know. And I can actually do that, you know, I can find the will. So anyway, what my ego was saying was, okay, Susan, wait, she's, you know, building this story that I wasn't quite aware was a story. So it was that whole thing of... She's turning 13 and you need to do something different than who you are. So don't look to your own experience. You know, get online and look up 13-year-old rituals and, you know, of course I would read them and I'd be, you know, my eyes were rolling back to my head. Go to the next one, you know. And finally I had this experience of I could just be me and offer her that. And so...
Wow.
It was a really cool experience in that way. I really have no idea how much she enjoyed it. I actually think she did. But I know I enjoyed it. And I was even thinking yesterday as she went on with her day, you know, with her friends and her whatever she was doing, 13-year-olds do, I thought, you know, I could actually die today and be just fine.
Mm-hmm. It was that satisfying.
It was that satisfying of a place that I got to for me. Mm-hmm. Not the content, you know that, yeah.
It didn't have to do, what you're talking about didn't have to do with what you actually did. Or
no.
It didn't even sound like how she responded to it.
Right,
anything.
Right.
It's just you got to look to you,
yeah.
And your authentic experience and act from that place, which is really what we all want all the time.
It really is.
And that was really, really satisfying to you.
Really sad. And that there was some, you know, I feel like for me, that's what I'm practicing to do. So that's what I've been practicing with all these years, you know, okay. Do I listen to the voices of self-hatred or do I come back into the moment? Well, it's too uncomfortable to come back into the moment because I'm not practiced at that. What I'm practiced at is turning the attention up here or looking, you know, you know, looking up resources.
Going to some other authority.
Going to some other authority externally or externally, rather than just pausing. And when I do pause, there's been such a practice with the self-hatred that comes in after. Okay, now I paused and trusted my heart, and then I did something, and maybe I got to feel good about it for like a millisecond, but then there was all the karma of my self-doubt that comes in, and, well, but what about this, and you should have said that, and how come this, and, you know, that whole thing, and really it wasn't enough, and it's not that that wasn't playing, it's that there was nobody there listening to it.
It didn't have your attention.
It didn't have my attention, because there was such joy in having done something that was me. And having that offered that, and
yeah, it really is as good as it gets.
As good as it gets. I couldn't believe it, because sometimes, you know, my ego, the real story it has is, I've got these three kids, so I can't die. So it'll use that against me when I, you know how it tells you you're going to die if you're sitting on the cushion. Well, now it tells me I'm going to die because of other reasons or whatever. And I start to say, yeah, I can't die because everything depends on me, which is what ego tells us, right? So that's what it tells. That's what it believes. Everything depends on it. And if it can get me to believe that, boy, I'm going to follow it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And then never look back.
And never look back.
Never look to your own experience.
Never look to my own experience.
That is so kind of wicked or something to think of it in that way. Because if it can get you in that kind of relationship and cut you off from your authentic experience, I mean, it would be bad enough if that's all that was going on. But of course, what's also happening is it does not like you. It doesn't care about you. It doesn't want you to be successful. It doesn't want you to feel good about yourself or about anything you do. It doesn't care about your kids at all. You know, it is not interested in them having a good experience of life. It's interested in them also being conditioned and being in a relationship with ego.
Yes.
And so to think about completely turning one's life over to that is really, really scary and awful.
I know. Yes. And it's what it's just what we do. It's just the human.
It's a human condition. And it's also the human condition that we have another alternative, which I think is what you're talking about. That we can let that go. We can come back here to our authentic experience, which is here in this moment. And there's a place to act from that, which takes care of everybody.
Yes. And we don't believe that if we don't sit through those itches and pains.
Yeah.
That's what prepares for me every day when I still sit and my back still hurts and and I breathe through it and, you know, and the other day, I think you pointed at something I've been practicing with this. It's getting more clear which is which. And I have been practicing with just dive in, just go, just don't even give it a millisecond. Don't even waste your time with this thing. Because, you know, the way my day went was we did this, and then we did this, and then there was kind of some space, and then she went off, and then I had the other two. And there was kind of a moment where I thought I would start reviewing.
No.
Let me just dive into a five-year-old who is clearly wanting my attention.
And that acting from your experience again?
What is right here, right now, is not the story.
Yeah, that is so good, because it's always an option, isn't it?
It seems like it, and it's pretty, the road, I like that. You know, it's really right here. It's really right here.
And there's always something that calls us to that. So in this case, it was your kids, but if your kids weren't around, it would have been something.
Something.
It could have been, I mean, it could have been as simple as, I think I'll, you know, clean up this, or take care of this, or like that. Or it could be, I feel like I, you know, what's really needed is for me just to stop for a moment and rest, or whatever it might be.
Yes. I had one of those. It was the most bizarre things. I just sat down on the couch, and I got up early and cleaned the house, and so, you know, I'm like, oh, this feels kind of like the next thing to do. I don't need to be telling you, you know, having the other two, okay, pick that up. It's somewhat foreign, feels like to me, to begin to practice with just paying attention in that way.
Yeah, and we can really see, it's nice, it's kind of like a science experiment.
Yeah.
We can really see the difference between the two, as other people have been saying. It's stark. You know, so the experience of this, you haven't said that much about it, but you know it's going to be chaotic and unhappy and frenzied, and there's going to be that sense of abandonment because it's, you know, all of your life force has been given over to something else.
Yeah.
Here, you know, it's calm and clear and relax. Even though there might be a lot going on,
mm-hmm. Right?
There might be a lot of feelings happening, or even hard things going on. But it's being held in something that is grounded and is clear.
Well, to me, it's being held in. There's nothing wrong.
There's nothing wrong.
Which is the whole retreat, right? Mm-hmm. Well, I was thinking of that. Mountains are mountains, then they're not, then they become mountains again. You know that whole, and they're Buddhists.
It's first, first mountains are mountains, and rivers are rivers. Then mountains are not mountains, and rivers are not rivers. Right. And then in the end, mountains are mountains, and rivers are rivers.
So I was thinking that about me. Mm-hmm. You know, first, Susan was Susan, and Susan was Susan, and there was something wrong.
Right.
And then there was Susan with Susan, and there's the theory, there's nothing wrong. I go on the retreats, I look, I mm-hmm. sit, I'm looking, practicing. Mm-hmm.
There's something other here than what I thought about as Susan.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then what I returned to yesterday is, Susan's just Susan in this form today, mm-hmm. and there's absolutely nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. So why not be her?
Why not be her? And that person has nothing to do with this.
Right! And never did.
Never did, even though it seemed like it.
Yes, and I'll end with this real quick transition. I actually think that's a transition that 13-year-olds go through. Hmm. And my niece articulated it this way. I had her on the phone. You know how they have all those FaceTime things. Anyway, so she's on the phone. She's 10 months older than Clara. And one thing she said, not on the phone, but she said previously when she was looking at it for herself about the last 10 months of her life, is that in the beginning of, right at 12, at the end of 12, she made this video with her brother, and it was fun, and she was fine, and she just laughed and laughed. And at the end, they made another one, and she was really self-conscious, and it wasn't fun anymore. And when she was talking to my sister was just exploring it with her, she burst into tears about it. Because I think it's the human condition. It's just what we get to practice with. It's not because of our parents, and it's not because of our... It's just what happens. And it's really sad.
It is
hard. And we're not alone. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. Mm-hmm. And I'm really grateful to this practice because we get to return to that. There's nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong.
Yeah, those of us who have been exposed to the teachings that show us the other possibility than living in that state forever mm-hmm. are really, really, really fortunate.
Yeah. So thank you.
Thank you. Penny.
Well, I had this great experience yesterday, morning and evening. And the morning was celebrating a 13-year-old, and the evening was celebrating a 50-year-old.
Oh, really?
Yeah, two different places, two different, totally different contexts. But what was powerful was what, I, looking back on it, I realized that part of what felt powerful is what feels powerful to me about practice and group. So, in the morning, there was a group of people who, in many ways, don't know each other very well, but know this 13-year-old, and everyone just spoke from the heart. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone is in love with this 13-year-old, mm-hmm. and so everyone spoke from that, and it was just one of those times where it's just as in group. That when everyone's speaking authentically, there was this enormous intimacy without mm-hmm. knowing anything about anybody. Mm-hmm. And it's so much more powerful than knowing about people.
Yeah, it feels really good.
It does, and it's bonding. And the other thing that I really experienced was the non-separation, because this was something that was happening for that 13-year-old, mm-hmm. and I experienced myself, and I project it was happening for all of us.
Everybody was having the experience of that intimacy and kind of the goodness that was there.
And the affirmation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for most of us, that didn't happen when we were 13. that kind of event. But it was like we had that event for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so there really was no separation. So it was so powerful. And then in an entirely different context, in the afternoon and evening, a big sort of much more gala kind of thing out in a park, and all kinds of people from the public and people who didn't know each other at all, but gathered around this one particular person's birthday. There was the opportunity for people to speak of this person. And it was very much the same experience.
Huh, interesting.
That it's a person who is loved by people. Mm-hmm. And people spoke from that. Mm-hmm. And it was exactly that same thing of feeling so united, so linked. And also, what I was really seeing was that when we are invited to kind of speak of the best of someone else, we have to call upon the best of ourselves to do it. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we experience. Mm-hmm. We experience ourselves at our best.
And then if everybody's doing that, there's this kind of a group experience of everybody being present, basically, or being, you know, we talk about as being at center around the event that's happening.
And there's and everybody's in love. Mm-hmm. And you know, so much of the conditioned, I mean, part of what was fascinating to me was that this was a, this celebration occurred within the context of a group that works in the community and is sort of political. And so the context of that doesn't usually bask in love and isn't usually that same kind of affirmation and non-separation. But in that experience, it was so powerful to realize that, in a way, all we have to do is call upon that in ourselves and come from there, and we can have it anywhere.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like the kind of the way it was set up, we call people out of the kind of the smaller ego mind that might be there normally, and just brought them to a place of kind of up here.
Yep, And it was just, I just was so grateful for having that experience in different places, and just kind of seeing how it is possible, and then feeling so grateful that at the monastery and in practice, we're invited essentially to live in that experience, not to experience it as sort of remarkable, but to
it's
live.
What we're practicing.
It's what we're practicing.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, probably it's an accident when it happens. You know, just the circumstances line up, and like you say, you know, people are called to maybe come from that place for a period of time. They don't know how it happened or what it's all about or like what produced that, but to actually. You know, to know that it's something that's available all the time that we can practice, that's really different, because then we can actually be actively engaging with that and bringing that into our lives, whether the circumstances line up for that or not.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Andrew.
Go back to something that you talked about, how this place, this practice, this place particularly doesn't support ego. The whole schedule of waking up and sitting and eating and sitting instead of greeting each other, hello, how are you, shaking hands, you know, cussing with the eyes, all that stuff. And what comes out of that is this, first things I start to see are maybe all the things that might want to drive me back to the couch or cookies or TV or whatever it was before. But what I hear people talking about is that staying with it, especially over time, is this whole other thing starts happening. And I was hoping you could talk more about some of the, if you hear what other people have talked about here, those other things are so transformative and small, but huge.
What's your experience of it?
It's just like people are saying. You're walking along the, looking at the ground. Next thing you know, you're not.
So you're walking around in a really small perspective. Generally, suffering something. Things aren't right. There's something wrong with me. Something wrong with them. Something wrong with what's going on. You know, lack and deprivation is the way Sherry often talks about it.
And a reliance on something previous that you know or is sickeningly comfortable or old or conditioned or whatever that is.
Sort of like habits of self-abandonment, self-sabotage, like getting comfort instead of real, you know, what we're really looking for, things like that.
And once you look around, it's not that. Or once you do something from the heart for a 13-year-old, it's not that.
Suddenly, you're not in that little tiny perspective anymore. You're aligned with this much bigger thing that we talk about as life that's here.
Yeah, and I think everybody here has a computer or maybe has something that'll fit in their hand or lives on their desktop or something and might relate to the whole notion of the default settings where you have to wipe out all your default settings. I mean, well, here, it's more like what I've heard is we're not just turning off the plumbing, we're turning off the faucet, we're ripping out the plumbing, we're going to wipe out the whole operating system. This whole new platform's coming in of that opens up all the other stuff you can do now.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before you had to hammer it out on a Royal typewriter, it took a long time. Now you can word process, change paragraphs around, and print it and send it off over the world in 2 seconds. You know, other mm-hmm. things can now happen
mm-hmm.
that mm-hmm. couldn't happen when I relied on how I used to think. I related to a weekend retreat here where the Friday I show up, I get the job that's way below my qualifications. I totally don't like it. I'm going to resist. They don't think know who I am. What, they got, I got the wrong name. I'll leave. This, you know, it's not fit for me. I'll do it next weekend, like dieting or something. We'll start later. But then the Sunday, I'm doing the second half of the first task I started, and I'm skipping it. I'm joyous, and it's just totally...
You're really a different person.
I'm the person that I was when I started that whole thing,
mm-hmm.
before he got lost and the rivers weren't rivers anymore. middle section, and he came back to the...
So you are a perfectly good, or perfect in every way, person. Then there's this operating system that kind of gets attached. And it's like we were saying before, it's not interested in your well-being. It doesn't care about anything other than itself. And it's kind of using your life energy. And then, so that's one possibility. The other possibility is, I mean, the other operating system is interesting because it's not an operating system in the sense that it's like limited and fixed. It's just open. It's like an open source. You know, the information can just kind of come right in. And one is really unhappy, one is really joyful.
Yeah, it can accept applications written from people that you don't know, or
mm-hmm.
you didn't write it yourself kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And how this environment and practice in general, it really invites that. At first it seems like it's cutting things off of me that are me,
mm-hmm.
and that I'm getting pared, I'm getting pruned, and it's, this is, I need that.
Mm-hmm.
I have to, you know, at 2 o'clock, I watch baseball, whatever it is, And here I am, I'm sitting, what is this about? I don't, why? And then it's not, then they aren't being, then nothing is being cut off, things are now being added to, something's been removed and replaced, and I feel more sufficient, or I'm more adequate, or whatever I was looking for in the 2 o'clock baseball game has now been found in sitting still, and it applies to all the other hours and minutes of the day as well.
Right, and what's being cut off is not you, right?
At first, it seems like
this is me.
Yeah,
This is
my leg.
Uh-huh. But then we realize that that's not it at all. That's something that has nothing to do with me. That's just something that's been attached to me for some reason.
And in these comments about how over time it really, you can show up in other life experiences and be present and available to this other thing, whereas before it was just not possible.
Mm-hmm.
And it is that one day change from 12 to 13, everything's different going forward.
Mm-hmm.
It seems more possible, it seems more real.
Mm-hmm. Especially as we have experience of it, yeah? The more and more we experience that there's this other possibility, the more and more willingness there is to choose it, and more we see that, boy, that other place that I've been living from, that is not where I want to be at all.
Yeah.
Thank you. Just a couple more minutes. Anyone want to throw in something short? Alex.
Again, I was just remarking about how it relates back to the practice part of it, is that my experience of it feels like it's a momentum. Like the momentum has been to choose that which is not me. That's the thing that's been stapled on, that's not real, that I think that's who I am over and over and over again. And we get a glimmer of something different.
Mm-hmm.
And then we start practicing that.
Start practicing the other thing.
Start practicing the other thing, and
mm-hmm.
it develops its own kind of momentum where
mm-hmm.
It's not that I won't fall for the old stuff. It's just that it'll become clearer. It'll start becoming further and further away, and it'll be like, oh yeah, it's that. It's that thing.
It's interesting to think about it having its own momentum. There's this old Buddhist image of, you know, you have the wheel of karma,
mm-hmm.
this huge wheel that's just kind of rolling along. And it's got all this momentum behind, all this force behind it, because it's so huge and it's been rolling around for so long. And what we do in practice is we slowly kind of slow it down and slow it down, and finally it stops, and then we start moving in this direction, kind of unwinding everything that's been done.
Exactly, yeah. That's a really good image. And then the other one is that it's always, that authenticity has always been there since I've been around.
Mm-hmm. And even before.
Even before, and it will never leave me. Mm-hmm. And I think that the thing that I've always heard is that we just don't know it.
And we just don't know that that's
we
there.
We just don't know that that's there. Mm-hmm. We just don't know that that's true. Mm-hmm. And part of the practice is, you know, it feels like I'm cutting off parts of myself, but it's really not. It's mm-hmm. just ego trying to cling desperately to the authentic, kind of crowding around the authenticity so that it feels like me, but it's kicking and screaming.
It's that thing that's often used of, Michelangelo was apparently asked, how did you, the statue David?
That's right.
How did you do that? And he said, well, I just chipped away everything that wasn't David.
There it is.
And that's kind of what we're doing to ourselves.
Exactly.
For ourselves all the time. Yeah. And the tricky part, of course, and this is what you're saying and has been implied in what other folks have said too, is we think that's me, and so it's really painful.
Right.
And it's difficult. Way. Don't do that. We resist it. But when we get it, that who we are is the beautiful thing that's in the stone,
yeah.
instead of the other stuff that's been stuck to it, it's still painful. Mm-hmm. But there starts to be a lot more willingness for that chipping to happen because it takes us to a much better place.
Yeah, it's starting to reveal what's always been there, and mm-hmm. it's just ready to see the light of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Thank you. And thank you all.